Welcome back to ArtsMag. This is episode 28. I'm your host, Matt, and I'm here with...
Jerry Gagosian.
Jerry, what's the latest and greatest? What's going on?
Oh, you know, just avoiding packing.
Where are you headed?
Off to the art world's June Mecca, which is obviously Art Basel in Switzerland, for some spargle eating, ludicrously capacious bag watching, primary market groveling, fine art watching. Fine art as in the sport.
Well, I'm super excited to see what you end up writing about for the Jerry Report and your experiences this week. You're heading out tomorrow. You're going to be there through the week.
Right? I know. Yeah. And I haven't, Matt even bought me a suitcase for my birthday.
It was your birthday.
And I'm looking at it. It's a very cute suitcase, but it's empty right now. I don't know why.
You better get going. It's getting late.
I know.
So guys, we got a great episode for you this week. Wait, let's talk about the shows we saw this week before we dive into the rundown.
Yeah.
Because we ended up going to New York.
To New York.
We went to New York. Honestly, we went on the worst day to go
of
the week.
The highest AQI in like New York history, and it was like the worst air pollution anywhere in the world was Manhattan.
For people who don't know, and it's really hard to miss it because Instagram blew up with it, but because of wildfires in Canada, the air quality in the Northeast became unbelievably dark,
crazy, dreary.
I coughed, my eyes were itching, and it just so happened to be the one night where it was the worst that Jerry and I decided to pop over to Perrotin Gallery in the Lower East Side, see a dear friend of ours, Mr. Henry Gunderson's exhibition. What'd you think?
Well, I want to say what I thought about the show, but I just want to back up and say that it was actually kind of a double. It was a kind of solemn day. That lighting, even though the fires aren't directly affecting me, it was sort of a weird day. Like that sepia tone light kind of became a symbol because not only was I going to see Henry's show in the city that day, but I had to go drop off a physical copy of my degree because the art school that I went to, San Francisco Art Institute, exists no more and has filed for bankruptcy. So there's no way for NYU to even get my transcripts. So I had to go and bring a physical copy. Thank God I'm such a fuck up in life. Like, I can't believe I still had a copy of my physical transcripts. So I went and I dropped them off. And you know, Henry is an alumni also of San Francisco Art Institute.
Oh, yeah.
So
class of 2012?
2012, yeah. So it was just so weird, like, to have to go and do that, and symbolically, and just when I think about how much art school cost, and I have torn feelings about it because on one hand, obviously I have a lifelong friend out of school who is Henry, and I admire him as an artist and I admire him as my friend, and I made a lot of memories, had a great education on so many levels. But then it was like, that's firmly over. But then it was also really nice to go and see my friend who I've known since he was 18. He was 18 and I was 22 or 23 when I started. So it was funny because I always thought I was so much older. Because, you know, when you're that age, like, or no, I think I was 23. But yeah, you like really feel like you're so much older and so much more mature. And I was just, you know, I've told you this before. I was like a little biatch in art school and I thought I was, you know, the smartest one there or whatever. Arrogance, youthful arrogance. But then Henry ended up becoming like a brother to me, like, but years actually after school when we both lived in New York. And yeah, it's really been fun to know an artist this long. I'm excited to know all of my artist friends, you know, hopefully for, you know, throughout my life, just because it's so fun to watch people develop and change and grow and improve stylistically, and not just stylistically, but also you watch their intellect develop and you watch their own visual language take shape. Because you know, when artists are all younger, you see them just like writers imitating their heroes, because that's what you do first. You like learn how to draw by copying or looking at other people's things, and whether you want to or not, that sort of influences you. And it takes a long time, I think, for an artist to really step into their own, where you can see like definitively that is a Henry Gunderson painting, or, you know, that's why I think it's kind of like stepping into your own iconic status when you finally have your own style. And Henry's had his own style now for, I would say, probably like at least 7 years, at least maybe 10. But, you know, I love to see him evolving. And he's one of those artists where he doesn't repeat.
No, definitely not.
So people have asked him, because he did this one series that actually Roberta Smith reviewed a long time ago for this gallery called 247365. He had a solo show back then, and he made these shoe paintings.
It's actually the ones that when you go live, when we watch auctions or something, mm-hmm. where people are always like, who made that painting?
Yeah, that's a Henry Gunderson shoe painting. And those, you know, those garnered him so much attention, and people love them, and they are amazing. Obviously, we live with one. But instead of just becoming an artist who is like, oh, well, this is just going to make me a lot of money and people will just know my style and I'm going to stop. I'm going to stop right here and just paint in this way. Henry has made several several distinctive bodies of work since then that are just as good, just as sort of, he has a great sense of humor that comes through in his work. They're all kind of like jokes, but they're also serious jokes, metaphors. And so it was really, I don't know, it was really great to see this new body of work. What did you think of the show?
I loved it. I've seen those paintings that he did. And for people who don't know, Henry had a show. It is now done. It wrapped up this weekend. But it was called House Painting and Various Odd Jobs. And the heartbeat of the show were these groups of canvases that are in the shape of a house, kind of like the four sides plus the triangle on the top, and these house-shaped canvases. And
they're huge.
They're huge. They're big. They're colorful. All of them have their own little world to them. It's a fun visual experience. There's also some other funky things. There's a whole UFO alien section, which is interesting. And then
the runners,
the marathon runners, man and woman. So Henry's show, congratulations to him. It was fun.
Yeah.
We coughed our way over to your exhibition.
Yeah.
But we're glad we did. Well, we got a great episode for you guys coming up. We will be hitting on the latest update from our favorite art world legal drama. What's it called, Jerry?
The Lisa Schiff Affair.
The Lisa Schiff Affair. We have a big update. And then we're going to hit on what everyone seems to be talking about nowadays, which is the Picasso exhibition at the Brooklyn Museum, curated by Hannah Gadsby. We have some thoughts. We went and visited it this weekend. You ready to go, Jerry?
Let's hit it.
Welcome back to Art Smack. All right, guys. We have an update from our favorite art advisor.
The Lisa Schiff Affair.
We have an update on the Lisa Schiff Affair. I'll keep this one brief because Jerry and I got into an amazing conversation around the Hannah Gadsby Picasso show at Brooklyn Museum. But I do want to give you guys a quick download on some progress and some updates have been made in the legal proceedings against Lisa Schiff, the art advisor. If you guys want a recap, go back and listen to our last couple episodes. We've been talking about the Lisa Schiff Affair. But we finally heard from Lisa. Well, we've heard from her defense attorney, because up until this point, the only documents and the only texts that we've had have come from the people, Barash and Grossman, that have been suing Lisa. Lisa's attorney, John Cahill, has provided a motion so that the judge could effectively throw out the case against Lisa. And here is the fundamental thesis of the defense. When Lisa was accused of these things, she was already starting to and was on the path to bankrupt the company. With the process of bankruptcy, someone is appointed to manage all of the claims by people who said that Lisa took money from him. And the assignee will now take the assets that exist within Lisa Schiff's company and just, you know, dole out people money. And that's their fundamental, you know.
So defense. Not admitting guilt and not admitting guilt.
Also just, not denying some of the things that have gone on that, like, maybe Lisa spent too much money and was very careless. I didn't see in the briefing, in the memo that Cahill filed, like, a voracious defense of Lisa's behavior, but rather it was more like, hey, they've been doing business for a long time together. Cahill said that, according to, you know, this report, Lisa has made these two people $10 million. That's what is on black and white. I can't verify that, but that is what the filing says. And that, hey, just wait your turn. You're going to get taken care of in bankruptcy court. That's it. So that is yet another stop on this wild legal journey. There's some other stuff in the memo, but really the fundamental thesis is that.
Yeah. So maybe that will work.
I mean, it's like it kind of takes the teeth out of this thing. It's kind of like, it's just going to be a bankruptcy fight and whatever. And
I mean, I'm sure that this judge is just like, Jesus Christ, because this really is like rich people problems. No offense. Getting stolen.
No offense to the rich people.
Yeah, it's not fun to get stolen from or misled. And it's terrible when a friend stabs you in the back, you know? So.
Right.
This whole situation sounds like a lot of backstabbing and, you know, whatever. But there are this is truly a tale of rich people problems. And I feel as though at some point this judge is probably just like, people, we've got a lot of shit going on. Can we move this along?
We're trying to destroy crypto.
Yeah.
We need to
put Donald Trump in jail.
We got former president under indictment. Like, are you guys okay? I mean, one of the things I wanted to bring up was that when Lisa, there was a famous quote from like when the story first broke of Lisa saying like, the money's gone. Like, it's gone. I love you. I'm sorry. The money's gone. I think based on this, that it was gone because the bankruptcy thing has started. So I was like, that's what I'm gathering from this.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. So maybe that gives a little bit more context to that statement, like to be so flippant, like it's gone. I'm not defending it, but like, look, it looks like Lisa got caught up in some bad shit and she filed bankruptcy. And that's what the defense is going to now say, you know, work it out in bankruptcy court.
All right. Well, this might be the last time that the Lisa Schiff affair.
Yeah, because I'm not reading through bankruptcy filings. Folks, I woke up this morning and checked the New York court website to see if there'd been any movement in this case, as I do every morning. I'm just kidding, every other morning. But I don't think I have the stomach to read through bankruptcy stuff and see how this thing shakes out. But, you know, I'm sure there'll be a headline once this thing's fully resolved.
Well, all I have to say is the art world's full of shady motherfuckers. The other day, I posted something on Instagram in my stories and on my grid, and I asked everyone out there if they had gone to the Brooklyn Art Museum to see the current exhibition that's up their summer blockbuster called Problematic, which was curated by Hannah Gatsby, who's an artist / comedian, primarily comedian, most famous for their Netflix special Nanette. And Hannah worked with Lisa Small, who's their senior curator of European art, with Talia Sharoma, curatorial assistant, Arts of the Americas and Europe. Anyway, and the reason I had asked is because prior to me even seeing it, I had seen Nanette and I loved it. I thought it was really powerful. Hannah's stand-up special, Nanette. Which I thought was really powerful and very funny and more sort of like in the vein of like a Dave Chappelle, where it's like, is this comedy or is this just one person speaking? Hannah sort of in their own way had a very long hour-long monologue talking about who they are as, you know, a woman, a lesbian, all their sort of exploring their different parts, becoming awoken to that. And one of the big parts of Hannah's story is that Hannah studied art history.
Knows their shit, like really deep, not read a book once.
But all I saw after the show came out were these very bitchy, negative, defensive reviews. And, you know, I'm no stranger to this in the art world in general. I've noticed that anytime there's someone calling into question an artist, you know, holding down a legitimate spot as like the GOAT, God forbid somebody ever go in and say, but were they really, did they do something different? I don't know, you know.
Right.
There's always that if it happens, people get defensive. And I think in, you know, we'll call it a post-woke America, there has been this severe backlash.
And I'll just read some headlines that have come out. Reviews of Hannah Gadsby's Picasso show at Brooklyn Museum. Hannah Gadsby's Picasso show was meant to ignite debate, and it did. Why you should go see Hannah Gadsby's It's Problematic, and why you shouldn't. Hannah Gadsby's Pablo Picasso exhibit is a feminist failure. Hannah Gadsby's disastrous, problematic show. Blah, 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 blah.
I think even the newspaper in Australia, where she's from, said, like, the joke was on Hannah.
There were some really scathing reviews.
Which made me want to see it.
Yes, because obviously there is controversy, and Brooklyn Museum is a hop, skip, and a step from our house. And we were like, let's go see it. I purposely actually didn't read the bodies of these reviews because I didn't want to be tainted. And I don't know, had you read?
Yeah.
You did. You read,
I read
some of them.
Pretty much all of the big ones.
New York Times.
Who? I think the Guardian wrote something pretty bitchy about it.
It looks like Hyperallergic did too.
Yeah.
Slate wrote positively. The Independent. Art News kind of did a both sides isms, which they usually do.
Mm-hmm.
There was, I think, in summary, there were people in the media that are highly respected that both liked it and both hated it.
Well, that, to go back to what I was saying, I kind of wandered off the path. But when I posted it on Jerry, and I can tell that the post itself got really held back in the algorithm. I can always see when something gets a lot of views versus when it didn't. And if you don't know how that works, Google it, because I'm not going to explain it here right now.
Shadow ban.
Instagram is just a fucked up place. But anyway, I posted it, and it only got like 200 likes. And all the question was, did you go see this exhibition? I'm very curious. I want to go see it. 200 likes, but about 85 comments. And it was a post that clearly, like, it got held back in the algorithm, but almost everyone who saw the post,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a high
that
ratio.
Interacted with it had something that they wanted to sort of say publicly. And the comments were coming from people who primarily didn't see the show, mm-hmm. and were like, I read about it, no way, I wouldn't step foot in there. But then there were so many people who did go see the show that were like, it's so good. Like, I went and I saw it and my mind is blown. Finally, some people are curating shows in, you know, more contemporary, interesting way.
Wow. Let me give the audience what the exhibition's intent was. Maybe that'll be helpful to give some more context to this.
Mm-hmm.
50 years after his death, Picasso remains an artistic and cultural icon. Not only is Picasso a household name, but his artwork sells for record prices, continually asserting his status as the preeminent modern artist. It's Problematic, Picasso, according to Hannah Gadsby, that's the name of the exhibition, examines the artist's complicated legacy through a critical, contemporary, and feminist lens, even as it acknowledges his work's transformative power and lasting influence. The Brooklyn Museum's exhibition is organized with Hannah Gadsby, whose groundbreaking 2018 comedy special, mm-hmm. Nanette, called out the inexcusable behavior of some of art history's most towering figures, Picasso in particular. Through gallery juxtapositions accompanied by an audio tour, It's Problematic showcases over 100 works, including pieces by Picasso, and 20th century and 21st century women artists, such as Cecily Brown, Renee Cox, Anna Mendieta, Marilyn Minter, McLean Thomas. There was a bunch more. Cindy Sherman, Kiki Smith. Mm-hmm. Like we
all
we
the
saw.
Greatest hits.
So it was, could you, in summary, it was like, yes, here's Picasso. Here's a different lens by which to look through Picasso. And we saw it. So you kind of hinted at your opinion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell us more. Give
well,
us more
Well, there's a lot to unpack in the show. First of all, for all the detractors out there, I really recommend that you go and you see it.
If you
and
can, if you're local,
if you
know.
Can. But I'm sure there's stuff online.
Right.
Because there's a lot of text. Every single step of that exhibition mm-hmm. is fortified by text from Hannah, text from the curators, and then text of recorded.
I mean, there was every
text from things that Picasso is recorded of saying mm-hmm. about women. So she builds, Hannah builds a case for the exhibition or for why, you know, he was problematic as a figure in art history by juxtaposing these iconic feminist artists' works with some of his questionable, rapey, you know, works.
Misogynistic. Yeah.
Make you feel gross inside. And also some of the quotes he had about what he would do if he could to his ex-wives, you know, wives. And I think it was successful. I do have some critiques of the show, but I thought, first of all, I always like to remind people, you know, we have a very hard artcore base listenership, mm-hmm. right?
I'd hope so.
Yeah. But not everybody that goes to the Brooklyn Art Museum on a Saturday has that. So not everybody has an MFA or a PhD or an MA in fine art when they're walking in. For some people, this is the first time that they're ever hearing a conservatively viewed institution like the art world questioning out loud the validity of what, you know, one of the most iconic artists of the last century.
Who transcends the art world as a pop culture figure.
Right. And saying like, could there be anything wrong with him as a person? And are we potentially glossing over some horrible things, like he was allegedly incredibly abusive. Two of his muses committed suicide, and some of that is attributed to him and his relationship with them. He did make artworks that were very sexually graphic. Mm-hmm. He had sex with teenagers, or at least we know of one teenager when he was in his 40s. And she was 17, stating that he was in his prime, she was in her prime, which is a very misogynistic, odd statement to make about a 17-year-old being with a 43-year-old.
That quote was used in the exhibition. I think it was wall vinyl there. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. I think what Hannah was trying to do was take, and this is something you and I talked about on the car ride home, take the Nanette monologue that Hannah put together and give a physical body of evidence mm-hmm. around that position, right? That's what it really felt like. That monologue, which actually in the gallery had its own room and they were playing it on a loop, if you listen to that and then walk through the exhibition, there was exhibit A, B, C, D, E. And that's what I think Hannah's mission
you
was.
You hadn't seen Nanette before, though.
I had not.
So, and also, I'm going to say, as a man, how did it make you feel?
It made me think a lot. And spoiler alert, I thought the exhibition was good. I thought it was great. I thought it was really well done. And I don't say this just to like placate you or people who might listen and try to hedge myself. I generally thought it was a fucking good exhibition. Mm-hmm. I am someone, when I study art history, I have revered Picasso. When people ask
me. We have like 10 Picasso books in our house.
I do. I had them before I even got into the art world. I had Picasso books. I mean, that was a name that I recognized, works that I loved. And when you do read our history textbooks, like I did when I was learning about our history, you don't really hear a lot about, you know, Marie Therese or some of the women in his life, their stories or how he behaved in the studio. What you get is him and Braque were working together side by side, forging this new language of cubism. And then that was after he went through a rose and blue period and then his return to order and then his dabbles in surrealism and then his iconic status as this painter who died in 1973 and left a lasting legacy. You don't get the kind of inside baseball stuff of what happened with him, with his relationships and people. So Hannah's exhibition really illuminated me to those unsavory details.
Mm-hmm.
I, like you, had some like light criticisms against how things were done.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just start to say them. I felt that when you look at the work of Picasso, the works that were selected for this exhibition, which were works that belonged to the Brooklyn Museum almost primarily, mostly prints too, by the way, didn't give the full breadth of his work. There were clear absences from paintings from the Rose period and from the Blue period. I think there was one Rose period sketch, and that was it. And then really a lot of the works focused on his explorations of Ovid's Metamorphosis of Greek mythology, you know, the Minotaur, which we'll talk about because that was kind of a highlight. And a lot of the portraits of Marie Therese and the women, his muses in his life, which were a big part of his work, but not the full scope of Picasso's work. His sculptures, like I said, Rose and Blue period, Return to Order, some of these other types of movements that Picasso was involved with. So the way I kind of boxed it in my head was like, if you look at Picasso, the totality of his work, what Hannah did was take a chunk of it and then define Picasso as that chunk. And I felt like there was a large chunk outside of that, a lot of landscape work and other types of cubist stuff that just, they were just absent. And maybe that was because they didn't have the paintings available.
I don't think it was meant to be a retrospective of Picasso's work. I think that Hannah was using specific works as evidence.
Correct.
Of Picasso's issues with women, his misogyny, his fantasies, his desires. I mean, I think that it was, I think, yeah, there were a lot of prints and maybe that's what they had access to.
Weren't you telling me why that could be though? Weren't you telling me that?
I think there's a reason for that. Well, first of all, it is because it's the 50th anniversary of Picasso's passing right now. There's a massive exhibition of retrospective of his work that is on view. I believe it's in Paris right now. And so every sort of highly sought after, majorly canonized work of his is making, you know, a debut, or not a debut, but it's all on display right now in Paris. So to some extent, there's probably a shortage of, you know, he couldn't get the Madame d'Avignon painting or, you know, some of the most iconic works by him because they're all loaned right now. I don't know if that one is specifically, but all the major ones are on loan or working with through the Pablo Picasso Foundation, the museum. Mm-hmm. To celebrate 50 years since his passing. So I think that's why they had a limited body to actually work with. And they did a lot of Picasso prints.
A lot. Almost all of them were. I think there was maybe one or two paintings, honestly.
Yeah. But he made a lot of prints.
Right.
That was part of his practice.
Right.
Or I don't know if he actually made them, but, you know, he drew them. His doodles, as Hannah calls them. But then those works were juxtaposed with, you know, stuff by the Guerrilla Girls, which when I went to art school, the Guerrilla Girls were badass. I mean, are badass to me, but were really inspiring because of all of their sort of, they were like early on making memes, basically. There wasn't any Barbara Kruger, but there was Marilyn Minter. There was Renee Cox, which Renee's work in the exhibition was astounding. It was so incredible. It was this photograph, a self-portrait of herself, nude or naked. I'm not really sure which one you would call it. Standing very confrontationally in front of the camera. And she's very strong and very jacked. And she's holding this big, beautiful baby that is about half the size of her. And it's her baby. And the baby's kind of squiggling and full of life and is also strong and, you know, excited to be there. And that is like a woman in her prime, you know, that. And I thought that work was really incredible. I thought Micheline Thomas's work in the exhibition was important. I'm glad it was there. I again, just like the Picassos, I could have seen other works that would have been maybe better. Cindy Sherman's work was in there. I didn't really get why they chose that specific Cindy Sherman work.
Probably the only one they had available. I don't
know. Maybe. I mean, I don't know. But it was great to be acquainted with older heroes of mine and women who are, you know, I view as me being in direct dialogue and lineage with as a female contemporary artist now. So it was really great in that sense. And I do think the show, you can't just look at the works together. You really need the text component.
Can I say, when I was going through the exhibition, I actually was focused on the text more than the images. So I spent my time reading literally every letter on those walls and on those cards. And what I found most enjoyable and fascinating to me was each work of art by the female painters and artists of the 20th century.
Carolee Schnee.
Right. Everyone there. Yeah. They also had, alongside the cataloging details, a quote by each artist, typically around Picasso. I'm not sure if it was a quote that they got for the show, if it was still a living artist, or if it's just something that they found in the archives of whatever that artist has said in their career. But everyone's take on Picasso. And I guess not surprisingly, but a lot of them were pretty positive to Picasso, I would say. Like Sherman's, Kiki Smith's. It went along the lines of this. Yes, some of the things that Pablo Picasso has done in his personal life, I don't agree with and I think are awful. But his work has been incredibly inspiring to me and continues to be so on this day. That was like really the tenor of a lot of the positive comments. And I honestly think that was the tenor of Hannah's show. I mean, do you disagree with that? I don't think Hannah's mission was cancel Picasso, like throw it out, put him in the dumpster. My take on it was that it was more, let's rethink this. Let's understand Picasso in 360, four dimensions, his entire being, both the great artist and probably not the best person as well. And just stop with the mythologizing of just the hero, you know, genius, right? That was what that's what Hannah was trying to say, in my opinion.
Yeah. In some way, I think that they're kowtowing a little bit to these red-pilled, anti-feminist, knee-jerk reactionaries to the sort of woke movement. I think that we all reached an apex of the like cancellation woke experience. And so much so that like nobody now would dare say like, actually Picasso should be canceled, as should Roman Polanski and Woody Allen and, you know, go down the list. Because the whole cancel this person, cancel that person, they're problematic, they made missteps, they tried to grab her by the pussy, whatever. It's so divisive right now in culture, and people don't want to do that anymore because it's viewed as cringy. And in a way, that is sort of a few of the comments, because I do think the text played such an important role in this exhibition that weakened the show, was there were a few times where the curators, the head of the Brooklyn Art Museum, Anne Pasternak, and Hannah said, well, it's not like we can cancel Picasso, and it's not like this show is going to do anything to change his place in art history. And I thought, well, if you really believe that, then what? A, why didn't you make it spicier and really burn the house down? Or do something else? That's sort of one critique I have of the show, is that it made it toothless to say, like, but it's okay because, like, it's not like we can really do anything about Picasso now that we're sort of altering his public perception. You're admitting defeat for, or they were basically defeating defeat for their curatorial mission. And that was something that I found to be weak about the show, where I was like, that's the fuck up. That's the error right there, is that you set up this premise, go to all this work to make this exhibition, and then because it's not popular, it's viewed as cringy. And this is something else I want to talk about later on, about, like, when did being a feminist become cringy? Because it is right now in culture to a lot of people. It's almost like a bad word to say you're a feminist. But it's like, why did you go to so much trouble to set up all the pieces, and then when you go to roll the ball to knock them down, the pins, sorry, when you set up all these pins, and then you roll the ball to go knock them down, you're like, oh, but, you know, we're going to miss that anyway. Like, it's fine. Picasso will survive this.
But I think I go back to the intent, right? Because if the intent by Hannah and Brooklyn Museum were to make people think differently about Picasso, then I think bullseye. Or what's a good phrase when you get a strike? I think strike. Because yeah. I did leave that thing having this idea of who Pablo Picasso was, and I left there with a different perspective. And I will say, it doesn't mean that I'm like, fuck Pablo Picasso, anti-forget him. I'm still a fan of the work, but now I have a more appreciation about who this person was, you know, in the studio, in those quieter moments, amongst his relationships with his friends and his lovers and people in his life. And I think that is a healthy thing to instill upon visitors. And I think some of the criticisms from the internet and from media here about it really stem from the same arguments we have as a society in the US and globally about cancel culture, about tearing down Confederate statues, about, oh, we can't do this. We can't go back and revisit history and tear down people. And we can walk and talk at the same time. We can learn from the past. We can learn more about people that we revered. Doesn't mean we have to tear them down completely, but to quiet it, I think, is disingenuous.
Recontextualize it.
That's what I think the mission was here, and I think they did a great job with that.
I think they did a great job, but I think they did some backpedaling on that statement. Like, I don't think the show, I mean, I guess the word problematic has fallen out of vogue, I read also. Problematic, yeah.
Because problematic is made
up. Did I say problematic? No. Okay, but has fallen out of vogue due to the reaction to the woke era and the anti, you know, post-woke world and the anti-cancel culture. There's an anti-cancel culture now. And so people don't use that term as much anymore. It's kind of viewed as an elder millennial term. And I just feel like they chickened out a little bit.
You want them to do? Like, walk me through the game plan.
All I would say is, like, you know, there could have been a smarter response where you're putting your foot down. It's kind of like, oh, you know what it's like? Remember the other day when we were watching somebody on Fox News shut down all the other people on Fox News about the Donald Trump thing?
Right.
Because they kept saying, well, what about Hillary Clinton? Or what about Biden or whatever? And this other pundit said, well, we can talk about them and what you've perceived them to do wrong later. But right now we're talking about Trump.
Right.
And I'm not conflating Pablo Picasso and Trump, but what I'm saying is instead of making like a big fuck off statement and saying like, hey, why don't you look at the show? Why don't you read the text? Why don't you listen to Hannah speaking during Nanette? Why don't you look at the works that we've selected? Let's look at the quotes. Let's draw from like all these different things. And then you come to a conclusion yourself. Instead, there was just this little bit of cheekiness that was like, but we don't really think it's like gonna drastically change the world's perception of Picasso.
What if the Brooklyn Museum announced in conjunction with this exhibition that they were deaccessioning every Picasso work that they have? I mean, is that...
That would be different. And so then here's the other thing that made me sort of uncomfortable about the show. Is that while I thought I went into it, I of course wanted to like it, but I also was like, there's a chance I might not. There's a chance this might make me cringe and feel embarrassed. I didn't. I thought it was great. I thought the work, I thought that there's a very succinct thesis that Hannah puts forward, and
I agree.
It works. So to that end, bravo. What bothers me though is that it's the exhibition is being held in a building that is also named, it's named after the Sacklers. It's an Elizabeth Sackler building. And again, politics are very complicated right now, but, and I'm not trying to conflate here, but it's interesting that a museum would take a moral, sort, it seems like a moral or an ethical stance on anything, but they would dare to leave the Sacklers' name on that building and allow that name to be associated now with quote unquote progressiveness. It gets very messy because I just feel like that's the first thing. Like yes, feminism, it's a very long, slow slog for men and women to peacefully and amicably view each other as equals in this world and work together and get along and, you know, whatever. But we have a very clear and present danger in culture and society, which is what has happened in the wake of the opioid crisis that was really instigated by the Sackler family and all of the misinformation that was propagated through our medical system. And now we have entire coastal regions of our country that are collapsing in on itself and are crumbling, and families and children without parents and children being born addicted to opiates. And, you know, it's a very, very, now there's fentanyl because the opiates were taken off the table. And then there's like mega drugs that are coming even after fentanyl. I mean, it is a huge fucking problem. And it, there is a direct line that can be linked to the Sackler family and their relationships with, what was their main drug that they sold?
Oxycontin.
Oxycontin. So to see that name on the building, that was kind of, to me, another thing where I was like, I don't want to like it. Again, I do think they did a great job. I like the show. But I think holding it in that wing gives people yet another reason to not even give it a chance.
Yeah.
Because that was a lot in my comments where people were like, I will not go see that show out of principle because the Sackler name is on that fucking building.
Wow. I can't argue against that point. I found that my criticisms of the show were minor and kind of just nitpicky things. Like I didn't see periods from the work from the blue period or whatever. Like these things are very trivial. I'll reiterate. I felt like what I thought was their intention resonated with me and hit me. And I was like, okay, I just wanted to read you some stuff from the New York Times. They did sort of a initial.
Yeah. You know, Jason.
Yeah.
Something. And it was Farrago.
It was not that friendly. And they went back now a day later and they wrote something more about the broader conversations that it brought up and the reaction by other critics about the exhibition. And in spite of the strong reactions to this exhibition, The museum has had a 51% general admission increase from the weekend before. So it's driving traffic there, no doubt. I don't know how that relates to the cause one that happened a few summers ago, if that was more or less, but certainly this has been, you know, one of the summer blockbuster shows of the year.
Maybe it has to do with what they said about good reviews versus bad reviews for movies. Remember we were just talking about
The producers.
Yeah, but like
the whole movie, The Producers, the whole movie, The Producers,
but also who wrote about this recently that if a movie gets a good review, it's not likely to do well at the box office.
There was a study that I had read. Some researchers had looked at the relationship between box office sales and critical reviews. And they found that what you think is the opposite when the data comes. Not necessarily the worst reviews, the more money, but they found that if you have bad reviews, sometimes you lead to higher box office sales. And conversely, great reviews, great Rotten Tomato scores aren't leading to higher box office sales. And it's like, I don't know, is it that people are fascinated? It's like the car crash watching kind of personality type or something where people just want to see something that's bad, quote unquote.
I feel like that is really the thing. I before you get into the quotes, I just have to say, out of all of the negative, shitty comments about the show that I got on my Instagram when I just asked people like, hey, did you guys go see the show? What did you think? It was all of these, and I have to say it was dudes primarily, like 95% that were like, fuck that show, I'll never go see it. Like, it's in a Sackler building. It's so cringe. It's not making a good case for feminism. Hannah Gadsby is no one of any significance, as if Hannah doesn't count as a person who could have an opinion about Pablo Picasso. There was just a lot of misogyny and sort of bad old beliefs, separate the art from the artist, like all of those traditional things that they deal with, besides the Sackler building thing, they deal with in the exhibition.
One of Hannah's great lines from Nanette was, separating the art from the artist? No, you don't own, what'd she say, a Lego on a stand or a Lego with tits? You own a Picasso, like take his name off that painting and you ain't buying that shit. And that was her counterpoint to the artist versus the artist thing, the art versus the artist thing. But I found a quote by Cindy Sherman on the wall that literally said, I separate the art from the artist and I respect Picasso. Ann Pasternak, the museum's director, said, we welcome the debate. We knew the show was going to be controversial. And if the result is that more people are engaging with the art, we think that's frankly awesome. If you want a show with hundreds of Picassos, go to Paris. And if you want an interesting conversation, come to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with what she said there. I don't.
Yeah, I was really touched, I have to say, as a woman, that you gave it the amount of attention that you did, and not that I would expect any less, but that you really went through it and you considered these feminist icons and Picasso's work in their relationship to it and all the text, and you came out of it and I wasn't sure what your opinion was going to be, and I was nervous that this was going to be one of our first major disagreements.
Nah, fuck that shit.
Yeah,
that thing sucked. Picasso's the man. Like,
yeah, because we do have so many Picasso books in our house. And I on the other hand, you know, I feel as of the last 5 years, I don't even know how many years it's been now. We'll say 4 years, 5 years. I've seen this massive anti-feminist wave that is not just, you know, trolls on the internet expressing them out loud, but, you know, even women making fun of other women who are feminists. Totally, you know, and these are people that have read all the same books that I've read and looked at all the same artists, but it became sort of so fundamentally uncool because I think people got really exhausted by the cancel culture situation, and all these men were feeling very defensive and like, are they going to be under attack, et cetera, et cetera. And then I think that that also infected a lot of women to do a lot of backpedaling. I think that is what it is, where they're like, and there's this whole trad pill trend thing. That's the red going pill on. Community. Yeah, yeah, that are like, oh, you know, like it's bad if women have had sex with too many people if their body count's too high, mm-hmm. or just, you know, like I don't want to be with an overly educated woman. Mm-hmm. Even Joe Rogan, sorry, because I know you like Joe, and I have
mixed
feelings, or you listen to him.
I listen to when he talks about aliens and shit. Oh, I think it helps me go to sleep.
But he
at
had
night.
This thing that I watched a YouTube video recently, and it was like he was talking to this like anthropologist who, you know, is a risque anthropologist, of course, and this guy was talking about why it's ultimately not good to overeducate women in culture because that's the reason for low birth rates. He was equating low birth rates to overeducated women and women who had too much opportunity to live a life for themselves, have a career, or leave violent and abusive relationships because they have the freedom to do so. They're allowed to own property. They're allowed to vote. And this guy is like basically making this sideways, shitty statement that's like, well, if we didn't educate our women so much, more men would be attracted to these women. But these women, they're doing it to themselves. They're eliminating the possibility for themselves to have partners because now they can be the breadwinners. They don't need a man. Instead of being like, oh, well, maybe as men, we need to step it up and be more emotionally developed, or we need to like work hard to be good, equal partners or whatever. They put the onus back on the woman and made it all about like, look what we did. Feminism was a disaster. It was a disaster to society that feminism exists. And all of this information that I know so many men really listen to and value, and I know that men are having their own struggles right now, and that's also really being talked about in society and culture, so I'm not here to discredit that. But it is upsetting when the discourse just in the past decade, but overtly in like the last 5 years, has really become like what are we trying to return to the 1930s, 40s, or whenever it was? Like we're going to skip over the fact that second and third wave feminism didn't happen? And it saddens me.
Yeah. Do you think a lot of those criticisms of the Hannah show stem from that philosophy that is definitely pervasive out there?
I think it is. Like, first of all, this exhaustion of people being like, oh, I'm so sick of cancel culture. And like, why do they have to take everything away from us and from society? You know, like, I feel like that exists. And then I think that it's easy. It's hard to sit with complicated ideas, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard to sit with something where there isn't a resolution. Because one resolution could be, no, let's just shut the door on this little Picasso thing. Like, let's just close the door and act like it never happened. And then I guess the other thing would be like to say like, oh, we should just totally take him out of art history, which would also be the wrong thing to do. Mm-hmm. He exists in art history. He's influenced so many people. He's
totally.
He's important. It's more complicated to sit with, now this is all going to make us think. And it's also going to make us look at, okay, while Picasso was doing X, Y, and Z and everyone was sitting there patting him on the back and calling him a genius, what were women actually doing? What were women making?
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel that is where the other half of the exhibition stepped in.
That's what it was. I think you just summed it up perfectly. That's the exhibition. And I think those who think that this was a cheap shot or some form of hatchet work on just Picasso, bad, women, better, bye. Like, yeah. You're wrong. That exhibition had tremendous nuance.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the opportunity to set foot in the Sackler wing,
yeah,
do it before you form your full baked-in opinion, is what I'd recommend. And this is coming from someone who's a man, but also someone who revered.
Wait, you're a man? I thought we were in a lesbian relationship.
revered. I'm still working out Pablo Picasso as an artist, as an influencer of culture, as a painter, as a thinker. He's been a hero of mine, and this exhibition casts him in a, I would just say, a different light, and again, a more holistic human being that I can now wrangle with as I move forward, right? I now have the full picture, more or less, which I think is much healthier than me of just having this snapshot of the idyllic version of this person. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. Picasso's just one, but as we were discussing in the car afterwards, one of the most, I remember reading it and just the sentence itself felt violating, but I had read like Salvador Dali's biography or something, and he had this quote that was like something along the lines of the only time he believed he'd ever witnessed true purity on earth or true innocence or something was to watch as she was anally penetrated.
Jesus.
And that he would like stare into their eyes, and that is how he could capture true purity and innocence. And I just remember being like, what the fuck?
It reminds me of, like, because people usually say it at these moments where they go, well, you know, it was a different time. You know, the standards were a different time and all that. And it's like, yeah, I don't know if that was like ever good, you know?
Yeah.
We're not talking about, you know, BC era. Yeah, where, you know, we're talking about like the 1940s when probably that quote was said. You know, I don't know if that was good back then. And some of the things Picasso, some of the work, I mean, we alluded to the Minotaur earlier, where the Minotaur was like his, what he viewed alter himself, ego. Altar. And every single print of the Minotaur is him climbing into bed with a woman about to just mount.
He was like asleep.
Right, always.
Or, you know, and it's like this Minotaur is like overpowering them. You definitely get rapey vibes.
100%. That thing is like
conceptual art. What? Conceptual. Consensual.
Right. That's what I gathered from it. I'm like, I don't know if even in that moment that was great. I'm not advocating that we strip all our textbooks now and all the Picassos get sold from the museums and get burned in a hole together. But it needs to be acknowledged. It needs to be stated and understood, and people can form opinions from there.
Yeah, I agree that there's a few artists that I felt like there was an opportunity that they could have included. I'm going to also just say that. I think that a case for feminism needs to be restated in culture right now. And maybe that is also another sort of weak spot in the show. Because as I was saying, there's this like cringe factor related to feminism or the way people perceive it right now. And if curators and the museum could have more clearly once again stated somewhere in that exhibition what the ultimate mission of feminism, no matter which sort of era you're in. My favorite quote, and I'm sorry, I don't remember who said it, but it's always stuck with me as the definition of feminism. For me, it's just feminism is the radical notion that men and women should be treated equally. And I love that. Like, just treat each other by the law equally. Treat each other, you know, with the same level of respect. You know, our bodies, your body, our needs, your need, etc. We make up half of the population. And because of where culture has moved in the last couple of years, and it has been done by these men on the internet, I really feel, that have a stunning lack of academic insight into the history of feminism, the history of why things happened at certain times and why it's important and why it should be better understood and more embraced, and every man should be a feminist just like every woman should support the men that live in their society, et cetera, et cetera. I felt like that could have been restated in contemporary terms to glue the exhibition more firmly together in the present, because the show is primarily older female artists who, whether you're familiar with their work or not, it was mainly works that were done in the 70s, the 80s. Yeah, I mean, there 90s. Were some newer works, but not really. So the works were all already dated, mostly pre-Trump works, like just to put that pre-Trump era works were like the feminist reactionary work, or the works in contrast to Picasso were, you know,
yeah, pre-Trump. After his death, basically. Yeah.
And so I think maybe that's another reason people have this inability to accept this show and come into it and give it a chance and read the text, is because people hear the word feminism or feminist, and I think they're allergic to it right now without stopping to ask themselves why, without stopping to look up what it means to actually just be a feminist. Mm. It's just like, oh, no, cringe, barf, ugh, some, like, what are you going to cancel all male artists, you know, instead of just like, wait, hold on. We're not saying we don't like men. We're not saying that we don't appreciate the contributions to art that Picasso did make. But you should be a feminist. And here's the reasons why. Because this is what a feminist is. And you actually do want an educated woman, and you do want equality in your society. That's what, you know, we should always be striving for those things. Whether or not we get there or not, that, you know, we're humans. We're never going to probably get there. But we should be striving towards those things. And that really should be, and I'll just state it on my podcast, you know, that should be a priority for everyone, is to engage with these things and ask themselves, and it made me admire you more as a partner.
You
and
didn't
as
expect
a man.
It, did you?
I thought maybe we would walk out and you would be like, it was, you know, I love your opinion, but I was afraid maybe we'd walk out and you'd be like, yeah, I see what they were kind of trying to say, but it
look,
fell
just because I read and listen to everything Jordan Peterson has ever put out doesn't mean I wouldn't appreciate. No, I'm kidding. But
I see what I'm saying?
Yes. And I think for like people out there that are in that camp, I think what I would leave you is, if you're going to be open to all sorts of other ideas, right? And then you're going to approach them and you're going to listen to some dude with the podcast tell you about this,
yeah,
you know, like
the liver king.
Trad life, you know, eat only bull testicles. Like, engage with this idea as well and form your own goddamn opinion and don't be so closed off to it.
Yeah.
And because I felt like I left that space with smarter, better educated, and a new perspective on someone who I revered.
Yeah.
And I think that's a healthy thing for all of us to do.
And the other thing, amen to that, and the last thing I'll say is this idea of whether or not, because this was brought up several times in my comment section, was whether or not Hannah was qualified to do this. Mm. And I just want to say, she has a degree in art history. I've worked at all kinds of galleries where it was always nepotism on some level in terms of who got to curate exhibitions. Mm-hmm. Either it really was a nepo baby, like it would be some collector's rich nephew who had, you know, great insight into so-and-so artist, but also they had like a driving reason to make the public interested in such and such artist. So I've seen these nepo curators, you know, infiltrate the art world a million times over. But Hannah's an artist. Hannah's a curator, not a curator. Well, now can say,
yeah,
is there a curator, but does have a degree in art history, and they're an artist themselves. And I thought it was really refreshing to invite somebody who is outside of the cult, right?
Right.
Who's not another insular figure in the art world. And it's not like they invited
Steve Aoki like Sotheby's. It wasn't that.
Yeah, or exactly. Or
what's his name?
Taylor Swift.
Robert Pattinson did that thing.
Yeah. They didn't invite Taylor Swift to come curate a girl power show, right? which would have been like an obvious.
Would have sold a lot of tickets, honestly.
That would have sold a lot of tickets. Okay, if you guys heard that, give me some credit.
Trademark.
Yeah. But they pick somebody who, you know, Hannah Gatsby had one shot to get their first Netflix show up to the top, right? And as Hannah said in Nanette, this is going to be niche. Like, there's not going to be a lot of times that you come to a comedy show and you're going to hear an art history rant, but I'm going to shoot my shot here. Mm-hmm. And Hannah took the time to address something that happened in art history that otherwise probably would have been overlooked in mainstream culture, and made it something exciting and interesting, and drove people without it being like sensationalist. Hannah makes this beautiful, very moving, compelling, emotional argument for why we need to look back at Picasso and reconsider a few things. And that's badass. Hannah could have talked about anything else. And I always think, like, why are people outside of the art world even interested in art? You know, I'm always very surprised when I hear, like, oh, you're really? Yeah. You're interested in art? Why? You know? Because sometimes it does feel so insular. And they could have just invited another dry-ass curator
right.
from some dry-ass institution to put some boring show on. Or they could have gone the other way, been really maximalist, and gotten, like, a Taylor Swift. You know, and the show would have gotten shit on by, you know, people, but sold all the tickets, or they would have had another dry academic curator and nobody would have gone to see the show. And they hit a sweet spot by working with somebody like Hannah.
Well, Hannah, welcome to the art world.
Great. You are the great Gatsby.
All right, guys. That has been Art Smack episode 28. Jerry will be heading to Art Basel, Switzerland tomorrow.
And the irony is the next time I'm home, the first thing we're going to do is record the podcast.
So we'll get fresh. Oh.
So you'll get some fresh, but you have to know I'm going to be holding back because the Jerry Report will be coming out.
Boom.
And my finest writing and my most inspiration is always taken from, you know, going into the Colosseum and watching the great gladiators, you know, fight. So get ready for that. If you're not subscribed to my newsletter, it's very easy. You just go to gagosian.com and you sign up to become a member. Yep.
Link is in the description of the podcast, as always.
So wish me a safe flight. And I'll see you guys on the internet.
Later.